stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them. Joey Held, welcome to this episode of Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. This is wonderful. I'm excited.
Me too. Well, you know, I had such a great time being on your podcast. Good people, cool things.
Very good.
Yeah.
Wonderful memory.
It was really fun. And you're such a good interviewer. It made me curious about how you got there. You know, the way that you ask questions and the way that you draw things out and then blend everything together so that it actually makes sense and it becomes cohesive. That was just so impressive to me. I don't hear that very often.
Well, thank you. I guess I can credit my college degree in broadcast journalism, which helped shape me into a storyteller, interviewer, all of that good things. I was thinking back to, I actually had plugged in my old hard drive over the weekend because I was trying to find some like old pictures I had taken when I was living in LA. And I was like, maybe it's on this old hard drive. And I stumbled upon all of the stories I had done during college for our college TV station. Shout out to UMTV at the University of Miami. And there was one where this did not shape my interviewing skills at all, but I think it helped deal with a wide variety of people who might know 0 to 100% of a topic. But another friend, they're not coworkers at that point, but another friend who worked at the TV station, we went around interviewing people about basketball trivia and just quizzing them, like, can you spell this difficult NBA player's name or pronounce like this hard to spell name? Could you name anyone on the Memphis Grizzlies, who at that point were like one of the worst teams in the NBA? And it was just great, just like plucking people at random and be like, hey, what do you know about basketball? And they're like, nothing. And we're like, perfect, come on in. And I think that in a small way kind of helped shape just my interest in talking to people and seeing what they're all about, even if it's like not at all related to what we were trying to ask people about. Like, that made it more interesting in most cases.
I love that. That actually kind of answers a question I was going to ask. Because at the beginning of every episode, I ask my guests to share something about themselves that most people wouldn't know. And most people wouldn't know that about you, that you went around asking strangers if they knew anything about basketball. That's a great story.
Yeah, that inspired a few other bits like that too. I mean, it's no different than like Letterman going on the street or anything like that. We weren't reinventing the wheel here, but it was still a fun time. I think my actual favorite was we did Olympic trivia and we asked people to explain the rules of curling, which I still don't know
Miami.
What they are. Yeah, in Miami, which is not a popular curling hotspot, but it was just really funny to see people explain. And one guy like knew it spot on, and you could almost like see a switch go off in his head. Like, he turned and he was like, in curling you do X and then Y, and here's the sweeper trying to get it. And I was just like, man, he's either memorized the Wikipedia page or is a professional curler,
or he's from Minnesota.
Yeah, possibly that as well.
Oh, I love that. Well, is there anything else you would want to share with our audience that people might not know about you that wouldn't be on your LinkedIn profile? And the reason I ask that is I just love to have a little context for a person as we get into deeper conversation.
Well, I don't believe this is on my LinkedIn page, but I used to host karaoke at a bar out in LA, and I was not working at this bar when this happened, but the bar is called Gaslight. In Santa Monica, and its claim to fame, I think, I mean, it's open 365 days of the year for karaoke, so that's already one pretty hectic claim to fame, I guess. But it was featured on a Funny or Die video with Jewel, the singer Jewel, who dressed up as a homely woman and came in, and she was part of an office party that was just doing karaoke, and she was ironically named Karen, which is now like
that is ironic. You know,
the least
given the circumstances.
Desirable name, right? Yeah, yeah. And all the other coworkers would come up and be like, Karen, like, you're going to come up and sing later. Come on, Karen, get up here. She's just like, no, I can't sing. I'm not a singer. And then finally they talk her into it, and it's Jewel, who's a great singer, and she sings a Jewel song and just like blows everyone away. And then like later came back as herself. And so they're like interviewing people who I would regularly see in the bar and like interact with when I was working there. And it was just funny seeing them like marvel at Jewel as Karen singing these really impressively impressive vocal songs.
Oh, I love that. I've always wanted to see something like that happen, you know, to be the audience member that sees that experience.
Oh, it's even just the video. I can share a link afterwards, but even just the video is like just so entertaining just to see everyone's reactions. And they get a couple of great, just like slack jaw, like mouths agape.
Wow. Reactions. Like Simon Cowell.
Oh, yeah.
Like in The Voice.
Yes. Yeah. He's blown away.
Blown away. Oh my gosh. So do you sing then? Because you have to be able to sing, right?
Yes. I like to think I'm more of a karaoke performer than a singer. There are certainly some songs I can nail very well, but I will also try to tackle like a Whitney Houston or, you know, someone who's probably not in my range, but still at least try to make it entertaining. I will say at the Gaslight, we did not have wireless mics, which I personally think makes my karaoke performance about 25% better, is having a wireless mic, because then you can kind of wander around, go up to people who aren't paying attention and see if they notice you, like
sit on their lap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just really befriend everyone in the bar. And I do have a playlist on Spotify. It was on my iPod, but now that you can get a lot more instant access on Spotify, I've transferred it over to there, of all the songs I've done at karaoke. And at last count, it was over 500 for sure. I think it's in like the 520 range or something, which again, when you host karaoke, I wasn't hosting every night, but I'd host a couple nights a week. And like a Tuesday night, just randomly in like a September, not a lot of people come into karaoke, but you're trying to keep the party going. So it's like, okay, maybe I'll try this, I don't know, Papa Roach song or something that I would like never sing, but it's an empty bar. I'm like, why not? Let's try it. And usually doesn't go over great, but sometimes you find a gem where you're like, okay, I'm going to add this to the repertoire for when there is a wider audience.
That is hilarious, Joey. I could totally see you doing that too. That's awesome.
Well,
I don't think I know 500
well, right?
songs. Yes,
I've been on stage. Yeah.
Many, many times. I'm a professional musician and I don't know if I could do 500 songs. I mean, seriously, but I'm not doing it twice a week, and we practice the same songs over and over again to make sure that we can perform them well. But I get what you're saying about it being a performance as opposed to a professional musician. But even I find that the most engaging performing artists are performing. You know, it's not just singing. It's not just playing your guitar. One of the people that I saw that totally turned me around on their music was Jerry Joseph.
Oh.
So he's out of Portland. Do you know him? Do you know?
I've heard the name. I don't know if I could name any songs, but
he's crazy talented. He's totally shy. And when I first started hearing him play, he comes through Montana every year. Super talented musician. My favorite song that he does is called Thistle, and it's actually about a town called Thistle that was they blew a dam and flooded Thistle. And the song is as if there's a guy who still lives down there under 100 feet of water. And it's just really a thoughtful song. The lyrics are, it's just a great story. Of course, I like it because it's a story. But when he performs, now my husband and I went down to Livingston, Montana. Our band, Rocket to Uranus, yes, that's the name of our band. It's a 60s style rock band. I wear go-go boots and mini dresses. It's really fun. We had a gig at the Murray in Livingston, which is a pretty well-known bar. And it was on a Saturday night. And we went down on Friday because Jerry Joseph was going to be playing at the Mint Bar on Friday night. So we went down there and rented a hotel room, you know, checked in, and then went to go see Jerry. Now, Jerry didn't start until probably almost 11 o'clock at night, but he played until 1 straight. Ooh. Like 2 full hours, didn't take a break. And I was standing right up front dancing with some other people, and he just draws you into his energy field. Even as a shy performer, there's something about his dynamics, the way he's quiet, then he's loud, then he's quiet, then he's loud, and he just draws you in. We got back to our hotel room at like 2 or 2:30 in the morning, and I swear I was far more exhausted watching him play than when we play for a 3-hour gig. Like, that's the kind of energy. So I can imagine you as a karaoke host being able to kind of get that energy going.
And you have to sometimes. Like, it's just, if it's a dead evening, or even when there's a lot of people and they're not like super into it, like, you know, someone picks, not to critique anyone's song choice out there, but if you pick like Money by Pink Floyd, someone chose one time, which I don't know if you've listened to that song in a while, there's a 3.5-minute instrumental break just thrown in the middle of there. And like most people, when that happens, they don't really know what to do. So they'll, you know, anytime there's a lengthy break, sometimes people just sit down on the stage and I'm like, you're admitting defeat just by doing that. You're like, I regret this choice already. But it's always like, it's always fun to see the people that are really engaged in it. And like, I think the basic rule of karaoke is if you're having fun, I think the audience is going to have fun too. But if you get up there and you're kind of like, yeah, my friend's making me do this, or like, I only pick one song every time because I'm just like, I need to be perfect on it all the time. It's like, no, like, have fun.
If
you can't hit that high note and you have to do like a death metal scream instead, like, live it up. Why not?
Don't live with regret.
Yes.
Just try. Oh my gosh. That just reminded me. I actually did karaoke a few months ago, like before everything shut down. And some guy who was a great singer, he did a song. Somebody asked if we would do a duet. So we ended up doing Summer Lovin' from Greece. And I had never done that song. We had so much fun with it. But you're so right that it's really about, are you having fun? And I find that that's the case in every circumstance, whether I'm speaking as a public speaker, like doing keynote or workshop, or whether I'm performing a story at a live storytelling event, or whether I'm singing, people can tell when you're having fun on the stage.
And oh, absolutely.
It makes them have fun. And, you know, this actually is a really great kind of transition into the whole reason I wanted to get you on this podcast. Which I know we go around in circles sometimes, but most of my listeners appreciate it. It's very organic. Was because I wanted to talk about some, as two podcast hosts, wanted to talk about some of the more difficult conversations we've had to have, like where we have to tell somebody about something they're doing or something we're doing that we know is going to be awkward, or calling somebody out on bad behavior without making them defensive, because that's, you know, you're just going to shut them down. You're not going to win any arguments. You're not going to advocate for anybody if you shut people down like that. So I know that you've had a few of those conversations and you're actually nodding now. So I know you have a story in your head. We can see each other, but our listeners are just listening. So tell me about that.
Well, I think with podcasting, you almost have more room to roam, because I'm thinking too, I also am a freelance writer, so I have done interviews before where it's been very difficult for one reason or another. I feel like I shouldn't drop any names or anything. I would guess that a lot of the worst stories I've had aren't like celebrities or anything like that, but just other people who, again, like, you can kind of tell they're not super jazzed about what they're doing. They're like, yeah, my publicist said I should do something like this. I did chat with a former basketball player who, this wasn't necessarily asking difficult questions. It was just a difficult interview because he was at his son's basketball game. And I kind of got the sense he didn't know the interview was happening. And this was just a phone interview. So like, I'm like, okay, let me try and at least get, you know, 10 to 15 minutes out of you. And just had to repeat a lot of stuff, and his answers were kind of short, and occasionally he'd like get distracted or someone would start talking to him while he was talking. And I'm like, come on, man, like, just speak up for like 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes.
Yeah, just give me 10 minutes. It's fine. But with a podcast, you have more time to kind of explore and get deeper into answers. And I think in those cases, it's, I know some people love to just hop right in, like ask your most difficult question first. I have not found that to work very well, especially if it's a stranger that I've never talked to before. And mm-hmm. when you try to like immediately come in, it's like, hey, let me ask you about this terrible thing you just did. They're usually going to be like, no thanks. And I mean, we've seen TV interviews like that before where someone will just get up and walk away and leave. And thankfully I have not had that happen yet. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I don't think it's a bucket list goal of mine to to get someone to walk out on me while right. I'm talking with
no,
them.
No, thank you.
Yeah. But I think establishing that that rapport at the beginning, even if, you know, who I'm talking to might not be a karaoke performer, you know, might not enjoy the stage like we do, but there's certainly some sort of common ground you can find. And I think having that can be important. And you're laying that foundation for when you do have to ask a tougher question. And then I think you also don't want to make it too judgmental. Like, your tone certainly matters. If I come in and I tell you, hey, tell me about that person you punched in the face. Like, I'm real serious and like accusatory. Like, you know, this could have been mm-hmm. an alleged story. You're going to tell me your side of it. But you're already, like you were saying, you're already defensive if I come in with that like real kind of journalistic, hard-hitting tone. Mm-hmm. And so you do kind of want to like lighten it up a little bit and say like, hey, you know, there's this allegation, but like, I'd love to hear what happened, like how did it lead up, like a little more delicate kind of positioning of it, I think can really go a long way. Mm-hmm. And then this is just a general interview tip overall, regardless of how difficult the question is, but I love not answering the person right away, like not responding to them after they finish saying something. So if they're telling me a story, then they pause. Silence, real awkward for a lot of people. And so if you don't say anything, this makes podcast editing a little more difficult, but if you're if you're like, okay, they finished talking, and then kind of count into your in your head, like 1, 2, 3. Usually by 3, they'll be like, oh, I should say more. And then they'll say something else. And a lot of times I found that's when I really kind of get the more meaty part of the answer, because they are just kind of speaking off the cuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes a long way of like, hey, here's kind of my rehearsed answer was the first part. And then, oh, I should say more. Let me say this. And it's, again, not to like cause entrapment for anyone or get them to admit something that is, you know, like bad or anything like that. But I think it just helps add a more genuine response to what they're telling you.
Absolutely. You know, I find that also sometimes when you leave that space, it helps them self-reflect on what they had just said. So when I would facilitate meetings that were difficult, you know, that there'd be a lot of tension, sometimes I would repeat something back to a person that they said, and they'd say, oh, that's not what I said. And I said, well, that's what I heard. did anyone else in the room hear that? And they'd be nodding. And he's like, oh. And it gives the person a chance to rethink or self-reflect or maybe present something in a way that they realize they've been misunderstood. And because so many times we have that instant reaction to something someone says, and then, as my friend Amber Johnson would say, then you've frozen them in time and they mm-hmm. don't get a chance to rethink what they said or to present it in a different way so that they're less misunderstood or what comes across is less bigoted or less obnoxious because they hear it back at them. Have you had an experience like that?
I would say less so on podcasts, but certainly in interviews before. And I think that is a great strategy, what you said of like saying it back to them. I think it's just human nature that we, like if you were to say, hey, let's go back to 10 minutes ago and you recite verbatim what you just said, I'd be like, I don't know. Something about karaoke and having a good stage presence. But like, I couldn't tell you word for word what I said. And you might hear something different in that. And I think this is a great chance. I'm going to plug your book of your stories to define you. How do you tell them? Well, I think the way you say something, you might be thinking it sounds a certain way in your head, but then how it's being received by everyone else, that's maybe not what you were intending for. And by kind of saying it back to them, you're giving them that chance of like, oh, like, no, that's not what I meant. Sorry it came across like that. Let me try to rephrase it a different way. And yeah, I think most of the time they'll be thankful that you're giving them that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as people dealing with the bigotry and racism that we're trying to address right now in our communities, I think that's really a key part of the conversation. So I mentioned earlier that I don't hide being Jewish in a town in Montana that has very few Jews. I tell people right up off the bat, I find some opportunity to share, oh, well, I make the best challah, which is the braided bread we eat on the Sabbath.
So good. Yeah. Sarah, well, I grew up in Skokie, Illinois, which if you're familiar, there's been a film, multiple films really about it, but a very high density Jewish population. I myself am not Jewish, but a lot of my friends growing up were. And like any time I could get like challah, matzah, which I know is to them, they were all just like, why do you like this? And I'm just like, this is great. Give me more of it. Yes, I'm fully on board.
Well, you know, so I'll actually say something like that because I have making it at high altitude is kind of tricky.
Ooh, yeah.
So I'll volunteer that somehow. And then if somebody, I can tell you more than once, somebody has said something insulting in response. Like when I helped somebody out in a situation where there was a car problem and I jump started their car and they said, thanks, that was real Christian of you. And I looked at him, I realized I had this opportunity. Either I could get insulted and approach it with that kind of tone, or I could choose to see it as an obliviousness and ignorance, because there's an assumption that there aren't any Jewish people around here. And so I chose that. And I looked at him and I said, actually, that was really human of me. I'm Jewish. And then I drove away, like with a big smile on my face. And I said it in as an approachable way as I could. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't leave room for him to be embarrassed. I just drove away so that it would give him that opportunity to think about why what he said might not be appropriate or might be insulting to people.
I think that's great. That's a wonderful response. Probably even nicer than I would have been.
Well, and that's the thing. So What do we do when we have to correct that kind of thing? I mean, have you had to do that?
I think, yeah, but I don't know if I've ever had it in a way where it was, where I had like an out almost, right? You know, like you were able to just drive off, which I think is like, it's almost like a mic drop, but in a real like less aggressive way, I guess. but yeah, I think it does. And like, there's definitely been times where I have remained silent and I haven't said anything. And then later I'll be like, I wish I had said something. Like even if it's not affecting me directly, like I think when you can,
especially if it's not,
yeah, especially, yeah. Like if you can educate someone or like make them see, and I think especially now, looking at just language and like, you know, I've been reading about phrases that I'd use without a second thought, like a recent one, turn a blind eye, which I don't say very often, but I've said it every once in a while. And it's like, no, that's actually offensive to people that can't see. Like you're making it seem like that's an obstacle that like, oh, they're not capable of doing this because of that. And it's just like, oh, you know, it's like things that you've been saying since you were a kid. And it's like, oh, actually this kind of has, you know, like racist connotations, or like the history of it came from something much worse than like how you're thinking it's used. And right. I think that's important to speak up in those opportunities.
Yeah. And I think it's important to do it in a way that is sensitive to the person using the phrase, especially if it's not a willful ignorance. You know, willful ignorance, I have no tolerance for. But somebody like if you said that around a friend of mine that happened to be blind, I might say, actually, let's just back that up a little bit. That, believe it or not, that's kind of an insulting phrase, and this is why.
Yeah, and I think... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And then we're open to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think... And like thinking of how the person will react, I think is a really good way to... Like there are some people who, in those situations, like I can pull them aside and be like, hey, actually, you know, this isn't the best phrase to use. Whereas if you were to call that out in a group of people, they might get really defensive of it. But in a one-on-one setting, they'd be like, oh, you know, like, thank you so much for telling me. But then if there's 10 people and I say it, they turn and they're like, no, like you're the jerk. And then,
or you're too sensitive.
Yeah.
That's what I keep hearing. Oh, people are just too sensitive. I'm like, well, yes, people are too sensitive, but you need to acknowledge that what you just said was insulting to people. Like, yeah, that's fine. People are too sensitive if they react in a way that makes you feel bad.
Yes. And I think you see a lot of that on the internet as well. Your reaction just said it all there. But especially like Facebook and Twitter, like I have enjoyed both of them for many years. Certainly less so, I feel like, nowadays than in the past. But yeah, there's some times where you'll just see a thread and just like every reaction to it, like every response, I'm just like, how are you, like, how did you think this, first of all? And then you typed it out and then probably didn't like read through it a second time, but then also sent it. Like I would stop as soon as I had the thought and be like, wait a minute, no, this is like, I'm not gonna say this, that doesn't even make sense or anything. Like, why would I then share this with the world? Like, it's just baffling to me how people will post these things like without a second thought. And
right,
then you have some people that try to come in, and I've tried to do this before too, of like, hey, that's actually, like, you know, not cool to say, or like that's a incorrect fact that you've just shared. And most of the time the person's just kind of like, no, you're stupid. And I'm like, cool, thanks for this real good conversation. Real productive.
You know, I called somebody out in a private message once when I saw something they posted, and I said, hey, this is how that came across. And you know the response? I know.
Oh, no.
I was like, wow, okay. And I think what people forget is that this is your reputation. Mm-hmm. So you can be okay with the consequences of being a jerk. You know, like, this person, she understood the consequences were that this person was probably going to block her and that she was affecting how people viewed her. And for some reason, she was okay with that. But I think there's a limit to your understanding of the consequences there, because there's this ripple effect. And I've had a guy say, well, I'm just kind of an asshole. It's who I am. And I'm like, okay, as long as you're okay with that, you're not going to complain about having crappy relationships and not having any close friendships or being single and lonely, then, you know, that's fine. But, you know, you can change that. You don't have to be an asshole. Like, it's just kind of bizarre to me.
I think you see that with comedians a lot of times too, of, hey, like, oh yeah, you're too sensitive. Like, everyone's too PC. And it's like, no, there's like a, and especially on comedy, like, it's such a fine line and it's so subjective too. Like, what I find hilarious, you might find very offensive. And it's like, okay, can we tell something that's like not belittling a group of people while still being funny? And like, yes, you certainly can, but you'll have some comedians that are just like, oh, I'm going to be an asshole just for the sake of it. And then when people are upset about it, be like, oh, you just don't get it. Like, that's, you know, that's not your,
you're just not my audience.
Yeah. But then someone, I was just having this discussion with a friend recently too about like this sort of, and it's usually like a white male, let's, like me, but I like to think I'm not as much of an asshole. But they, you know, they'll make just some like real offensive comment that's like not funny, but they're, you know, they'll defend it by saying, ah, you're just too sensitive about it. And I look at a comedian like Anthony Jeselnik, who like openly has like a persona of like being an asshole and like kind of runs with it, but his jokes are like clever word plays, and like they'll have like a lot of build up to them, and it's not just like, oh, you know, like all of this specific person, like these type of people all suck. Like, that's not the joke. It's like, here's an example. This made me cringe a little bit as a pet owner, but he has a joke where he talks about how Great Danes have such a short lifespan. Like, they're 6 to 8 years usually, and then they'll unfortunately die.
Right, because they're so big. Yeah, large breeds are usually shorter lives.
Yeah, and he said that, he's like, you know, like, they're called the heartbreak dog. He's like, but you know what? I think with the right treatment and care, I can cut that time in half. Oh. a perfect college doc. I'm just like, oh, like I feel bad like for kind of chuckling at that, but it's like the setup for it and then like the sort of like twist at the end. I'm like, okay, at least that took like some work and had some thought put into it instead of just like
insulting people.
Yeah, instead of just like straight up being like a jerk. And it is like a very fine line like that, but I think when you can kind of see like when you can see the thought that went into it at least and like the craft in those settings, I think at least for me, I can appreciate it a little more, even if maybe I don't necessarily agree with it. If that makes any kind of sense. Yeah.
It does. Well, it actually comes full circle to having fun. Like when he's on stage, you know that he had fun putting this together. Mm-hmm. You know that he was thoughtful about it and that he entertains himself as much as he entertains others with his work. And I think about that even when my boys were little and the rule was that you had to try whatever was on your plate. You have to eat it all if you don't like it, but you have to take a taste because you don't know if you don't like it if you don't take a taste. And then when they would eat it, the answer wasn't, ew, I don't like it. It was, okay, I don't like this because the texture was funky in my mouth or because the flavor stayed on my tongue too long or it was too spicy or, giving a specific reason. But what that does is it allows you to feel some gratitude for the food itself, even if you don't like it. Somebody cooked that for you. So it makes total sense to me that even music that I don't like, I won't necessarily listen to like banjo music necessarily. Or most bluegrass
that's
is my not
favorite
my thing. Yeah. So, and by the way, my 21-year-old bought a banjo while I was out of town in February. Ooh. And I was like, oh no.
Has he been practicing a ton?
Oh yes. Not a ton, but he practices. Okay. And it actually, when he's practicing, it doesn't sound terrible, but,
nice.
but I appreciate the musicianship. I appreciate the work that goes into being an accomplished musician, no matter what kind of music you're doing. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean I want to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. Like it, even to create a generic pop song still takes work and you still got to find those right chords that really, really hit you in the feels and get that arm pumping up in the air. Like
right.
That. I do have to ask, going back to the eating everything on your plate, because I'm a big Calvin and Hobbes fan.
Oh, I love Calvin and Hobbes.
Ever resorted to the mom's tactic in there of saying like, oh, this is maggot stew and like brains on your plate? Or have you not had to go down that?
I never had to do that. But I loved actually one of my sons until he left home, my 19-year-old, until he left home, he had one of the Calvin and Hobbes books right next to the bed.
Oh, I currently have
Calvin.
Multiple Calvin and Hobbes books right next to the bed. And it's still wonderful. Like 25 years later, like it still holds up. It's still very clever and wonderful. And the like, especially on the Sunday panels when it's the full color, where it's like Calvin dreaming of dinosaurs ruling the land and everything. I'm like, this is still so visually impressive. It's awesome.
Well, and it's relevant. I think actually most of it is more relevant now even than when it was before with his life and his fantasy mind. I love that. I loved his character. I love his character. So I want to kind of come back to this whole having difficult conversations because I think it's important. And I think right now more than ever, this is a critical junction in terms of having difficult conversations and being able to approach somebody who says something insulting or whatever. Can you think of a specific incident, like a story that you had to approach that kind of conversation?
I think closer to the start of the pandemic when mask wearing was still kind of like I don't want to say seen as optional because I feel like some people are still thinking that. Mm-hmm. But it was like, still obviously like facts and stuff were still coming out and someone had shared how they had gone out for like a walk or something and walked into someone who was wearing a mask who like leapt back and don't be near me. And then this person was posting how stupid they thought this person was like, you're freaking out over nothing. Like, we're not near anyone else. Like, I'm the only one here. And I was like, yeah, but we're like, the reason you're wearing a mask is like to protect you from, or to protect other people from you. Not like, he's not worried about you. He's like, oh, I don't want to get people sick because I don't know about you, but if I knew I infected someone with COVID, I'd feel terrible about it. Like, I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And so, like, I wrote it. I was like, no, like, you know, like, everyone's going to handle this in their own ways. I'm like, he's doing his part to help protect everyone. And like, all you have to do is look at other countries and see that, hey, their amount of cases has gone down, but ours don't, because people are still just like, no, I want to go out to my bar and everything. And like, sometimes you just kind of have to sit someone down, even if it's virtually sit them down and say like, no, like, this is why we're doing this. This is why that person was doing this. And no, it's not stupid that they're trying to essentially protect their fellow humans. Like, that's not, that's not something you should be critiquing, but instead,
so is that
you should probably
how you
be emulating
presented
that.
It? Did you do that in a private message, or did you do it on, I'm assuming it was on Facebook.
It was on Facebook. Yes. I shared a private message more like with more in depth, but on the thread, because again, like, thinking of addressing it publicly in front of everything, right. Like, and also because I just know, like, I've seen this person post a decent amount of stuff and like seen who comments on it, and very much like a hive mind kind of comment on it. Right. So I was like, okay, let me try and do.
So
like
they'll all come to their defense and rescue.
Yes. Yeah. So I was like, let me try and do like a one, you know, like an over, you know, an overarching. And I don't remember the exact wording, but it was essentially like, hey, he's doing this to protect himself or protect. to protect you from himself. And I think that's totally fine. Like, you know, that's his way of trying to help beat this. And didn't have any further people like come in and say, no, you're a dummy. So I guess that's victory.
Or insult you by calling you liberal.
Yes.
Because you wear a mask, which is kind of silly, but huh. So did they respond to your private message?
No, actually, no. They said, I got the read message, and, or the read receipt, but, didn't. And like, again, I think personally when, and this happens anytime I send a message to someone, especially if there's a question in it and then they don't respond. And I'm thinking like, they can't even take the time to respond, but then I'll hear like, oh yeah, I was dealing with like six different things and like read your message. And there's not a way on Facebook to like unread
mark
a message.
Unread.
So that you, yeah.
Right.
Like mark it back unread. And like, and I've certainly done that during the pandemic too, where like someone will text me and I'm like, I look at it, I'm like, oh, I can't respond to this right now, but I'll get back to it. And then just, it just totally slips my mind. So I'd like to think that was the case there. Like, he read it and like digested it at least. And this is a person who like will at least consider other viewpoints. Like I've found him to, you know, if someone shares something that's like counter to what he's thinking, he's not immediately going to reject it. So I like to think he at least
generally a thinking person, a thoughtful person.
At least, yeah.
Well, you know, that turns it around in my head. Cause I've done that before. I did that recently when somebody was complaining about a woman that was, you know, giving a lot of space. And I said, well, you don't really, you are complaining that she doesn't know all this stuff that you're going through. But did you consider for a second that maybe she has the virus and doesn't want to share it with you and your kids, or that she has an elderly parent at home and she's trying to make sure that she doesn't get the virus so that she doesn't bring it home to that elderly parent? Or maybe she has a child that's being treated for leukemia, and if she brings COVID home with her, then that child's going to die or likely to die. So, I mean, there are a lot of things you don't know about her and why she reacted the way she did. She's stressed out too, and you don't know why. And so that's how I presented it to her. The other side of that is I had somebody reach out to me and say something about something that I posted. And my initial response was to be defensive and kind of angry. Like, who are you to... And then I did stop and think about it. I did respond to the person, hey, thanks for the thoughtful message. I'm going to consider that. That doesn't mean they changed my mind necessarily, But if I'm going to reach out to people and expect them to be thoughtful about what I say, I have to be thoughtful about what they say as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perfect way of putting it. It's like, yeah, you probably are going to be defensive when someone tells you that. But once you take the step back, and I think this is like a great rule for life. Remember the old days when we'd send actual letters to people and it was like, hey, write the letter in the night, but then like sleep on it before you send it.
Yeah, the 24-hour rule is what I do.
I think that can still apply, like with, especially in social media, like it's so easy to just hop on, like rattle off a comment and then shoot it out there. And it's like, wait, no. And I've done this many times. I think,
yeah, I think we're all guilty of it
during this, of like typing up something. And then I'm just like, wait, why am I sending this? Like, this isn't going to help anything. It's just like, it's either not adding to the conversation at all, or it's like me intentionally pushing someone's buttons, which I think can be, you know, it's fun to think about doing
to it. But antagonize.
Then it's like, yeah, but then it's like, no, what is this accomplishing? Like, this is just going to get them upset. And like, then they'll say something back that'll get me upset. It's like, no, why? We don't need to do this. And
right.
I think like having that sort of like frame of mind to step back, even it doesn't have to be 24 hours, but even for just like a minute, and reread what you're about to post if it's an online thing, or like think before you're about to say something, which is what, like a rule we're taught when we're five, but it seems like it's harder to remember nowadays.
It's kind of gone now, isn't it?
Yeah. Like just take a step back. It goes back to being silent. Like just be silent for a few seconds and good things usually come. And sometimes the end of your silence is just more silence. You're like, okay, that's it. Like don't need to add anything. And that's totally fine too.
Right. And comes back to asking the right question to get at the underlying reason for the bigotry or the insulting language somebody's using. Like, who was it that influenced you in this negative way? Who, and obviously putting it that way is going to set the tone in not a great way, but kind of digging into the story behind why somebody thinks the way they do. And again, approaching it with curiosity instead of judgment. Do you remember a specific interview you've done on your podcast where you were able to kind of accomplish that?
Yes, I'm thinking. I had another podcast that was called Locally Sourced Joey, which was a great tie-in with my A Hot Cup of Joey blog back then. And I'm trying to remember now if this interview was from that podcast or the other one. But, well, either way, I think one that came to mind at least, which is, this is definitely on the Locally Sourced Joey podcast, but it's close enough. It's fine. It's all my brand. It's fine. And I think this was like less antagonistic, but I think it definitely came from a curiosity point, was the creators of Big Swig Sparkling Water, which is a Texas brand out here that makes sparkling water, but it's primarily kind of funky flavors. So like my favorite one of theirs is Party Pickle, which kind of tastes like pickle juice sparkling water. Sounds weird. It's pretty good. It's pretty refreshing, especially pair it with some barbecue. It's very nice. And this one, again, like the benefit of being in person, I know you're a big believer of that. Obviously, world situations sometimes prevent that, but we recorded this at their offices. And so it was the two co-founders and I chatting, and they were like, they made cocktails for us. So we're having these like sparkling water cocktails while we're chatting. And I think one of them especially like seemed kind of short at the beginning, like his, not like he was mad or upset or anything, but it was just kind of like, you know, my answers are like a sentence and that's it. And so I was like, okay, I bet I can work on him.
He's probably nervous.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, let's get this in. So I asked, cause I'm a big fan of kind of like failure stories. I think those usually provide for better entertainment. So anytime, and I fully expect your answer after this, but anytime I'm talking with a musician, I like to ask about their worst gig. So thinking about that during this. But I asked them, like, what are some of the flavors you tried that failed, that were just like spectacular? Like you thought, hey, this will, like blueberry cheesecake will be great. And then you sipped it and you're like, oh no, like that's awful. And it really kind of got them to open up. And like the rest of the interview, you can even really hear it on the episode. Like, they just sound more like enthusiastic and they're kind of more into it because they're like, okay, like, you know, like, we can do this. We just talked about, like, you know, one of the worst parts of, like, of what we've been doing, of like, hey, we had all these great ideas and they didn't go anywhere, and like, now we're doing okay. And so it kind of helps set the tone, and you're like, hey, I'm not here, like, in a weird way, even though it is talking about a failure, it like shows, hey, I'm not here to attack you. Like, I think this just makes for a good story. And once you say that, you're kind of like, oh yeah, like, that is a good story, and then you're ready to roll for the rest of things.
Oh, I love that idea. Tell me about something that really didn't go the way you thought it would, or something that you considered a failure, but then realized later that it was probably the most important lesson that you could have learned at that time in your business or in your relationship. Or, wow, I love that.
I have an in-person example of this working from like a third party as well. So that was a terrible job of setting this up, but last year I went to a wonderful little concert. It was the lead singers of Everclear, Fountains of Wayne, Eve Six, and Marcy Playground. And
wow.
Yeah, doing solo shows. And so they'd each do a solo set, and then they'd all come on and do a cover song together. And then like the second one would go. So no downtime in between each of the sets, which was wonderful. And then after they finished, they'd do a Q&A where they'd come out and they just put a microphone like in the middle of the floor. And they're like, whoever has a question, like, come up and ask. And a lot of the questions, like, people would have like a 12-minute backstory beforehand, which was always exciting to hear. Although the guy behind me was getting frustrated, I think, because someone was telling a really long story of how they had seen them at a concert, and then a whole unrelated story to the concert of like something else that happened there. And then they asked like, oh, are you going to come out with like a new sticker anytime soon or something? Like, it was a real, kind of unrelated.
So in kindergarten, we call that a comment and not a question.
Yes. Yeah. They just wanted to tell the story. And the guy behind me just at one point during the story just muttered, longest question ever. I just like was chuckling to myself in the line, but I got up and asked the question of like, what's the worst gig that all of you have had? And all of the stories were fantastic. I think my favorite was John from Marcy Playground, who said they were playing a festival right when AOL 3.0 had come out. And so I don't know. I'm sure you remember the days of like AOL CDs
they'd
give away. So I guess at this festival, they were giving those away. And so he's like, so we're just standing on stage and we just see 60,000 CDs just like flying in the air, like most of them coming to the stage. So they're having to like dodge these CDs while they're playing. Like, and that was the worst show. And I thought that was very good. I believe the other three all involved alcohol. So oh, I thought that one was a little
that's
more.
That's not surprising either, is it?
Yeah, but still all wonderful, all enjoyable. And then I had someone come up to me. Like, I took my spot back in the crowd, and someone came up to me. He's like, that was such a good question. Thanks for asking it. I said, yes, that's what I'm here for. It's like, give everyone good stories. That's not what I'm here for. I was there to enjoy good music. But
that's a great thing to do. Yeah. And of course, everyone in the audience is like laughing, and they're hearing a story that makes these people that they put on this pedestal feel so much more approachable and human.
Yes. Which it's like, they're musicians. They're just like us. I mean, we are musicians, so we're just like them, really. It's all full
well,
circle, yes.
With a lot less money. And my audiences aren't quite that size.
Okay, someday we'll be filling up amphitheaters. It'll be great.
Oh, wow. I love that. That's such a good question. And like I said, I think what that can do in a conversation, if it's a difficult conversation and you just have to talk about something that will then draw them in to share more and be more vulnerable. So that's actually a good question to ask just at the beginning when you know that you have to approach something difficult later in the conversation, bringing that up and sharing one of your own major failures that you learn from so that they feel safe to share their own.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I've had quite a few snafus on stage, but the one that I think was the hardest and that I learned a lot from was when I went to sing the national anthem at a baseball game.
Ooh.
And I was doing it by myself a cappella, and I had done it a few times with friends in harmony, which was wonderful, and they turned out great. But this one time I had performed it the week before by myself and did fine. And then this other time they called me and said that the person that was going to sing had canceled. Could I show up at the last minute? And I was like, yeah, of course. So I show up there, and there happens to be a major wildfire that had just started that afternoon. Of course, the first pitch is 7:05 at night, and this wildfire in the hills just north and west of my town was filling the sky with smoke. So I got out there onto the home plate, and I had the microphone in front of me, and I was really nervous. I could feel my kneecaps moving. But I knew I had this song. I performed it a few times before. I could totally do it. But I totally dismissed the fact that that smoke might have impacted my ability to hit the high note toward the end. So I'm singing and nailing most of it, but then land of the free. And instead of free, I went free. You know, it's like this little, you know, and I hit it, but I didn't hit it very well. And then I finished the song with a flourish and got it done, but the damage was done. And this is the first time in all the times that I had performed the national anthem, especially with my friend, that no one from the dugout came out to shake my hand afterwards.
Oh, no.
And I walked off the field through the gate, and my younger son, who was, he must have been about 6 at the time, he said, "Mom, you did great." And I looked at him, and I knew exactly what he was doing. He's so sweet. He's such a sweet kid. And I said, "Thanks, sweetie. I know that that high note didn't go very well." And he looked down, and he kind of pushed his toe down, and he said, "Yeah, I heard some ladies laughing." And you know what I said to him? And this made me go, oh, my gosh, I've done that. Like, I've made faces when people didn't do well, especially on that note. And how many of us have done that from the peanut gallery, kind of chuckled or made a face at our best friend? And I was horrified at my own behavior in the past, having been the recipient of this. And let me tell you, never, ever again have I behaved that way. But what was interesting was that I said to Max, I said, if you ever see something like that again or hear something like that again, you need to say something. And he kind of looked at me. I said, especially coming from you, if you had gone to those women and said, without telling them that I was your mom, had said, "Wow, that was really rude. I'd like to see you get up and sing by yourself in front of a few hundred people. You know, can you do that?" And just say something, call them on it, because you have to have other people's backs. And just like, who was that? It wasn't Brené Brown. I can't remember who it was that said, you have to be in it and not an audience member. Like, don't take any crap from people who are in the audience if they've never been where you are. I just, for some reason, I'm blanking on the quote and who that was. But anyway, I think that was a really important lesson for me and for my son. And let me tell you, he's always backed up people and been kind of the go-to for people who are being bullied for that. And I think that contributed to it.
That's awesome. And I think in a lot of cases, you might not even realize, like, it goes back to what we were talking about before. Like, is this a kind of a willful ignorance, or is it just like, oh, you know, tough break out there? But like having someone tell you that, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe like, I didn't even consider that. It's like, that's a person with feelings out there. Like, I shouldn't laugh at them, especially if I am not capable of going out. Like, I couldn't go out and sing the national anthem well, at least. I could do it. I think I remember all the words, but...
So maybe I should be supportive and be one of those people that says, yes, you can do it, instead of one of those people who goes, ha, ha, ha.
Yes, yes.
I don't want to be that person.
No, yeah, get out there and... This is a related national anthem story that I think, like, it's always stuck with me of like way back, this has to be like 15 years ago now, during a Portland Trail Blazers game, there's a young girl singing the national anthem and she forgets the words. And the then coach of the Trail Blazers, Mo Cheeks, comes out and like puts his arms around her and just starts singing, like they start singing together. Like he kind of starts like, hey, here's the next line. And he is not a good singer. And like just embraces it though. He just comes, he's like, hey, I like, you know, I'm just going to start singing this next line off key. And like, you'll be able to kind of join in. And it's just like the, you see the girl's face, like she's so nervous at the start. And then he comes over and it's like, she like lights up like, oh, I can do this. And then she gets through it and like finishes with a flourish. And it's just like such a heartwarming moment. And I, anytime I'm feeling down, like that's one of my go-to clips of like, this makes me feel good about humanity. Let's put it back
on. I love that. I mean, and think about it this way. Wouldn't you rather be that person than the person chuckling in the peanut gallery?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. When I do workshops on stepping out of your comfort zone, I always talk about having a posse. You gotta have a posse. I want to be your posse. I want to go stand next to you if you're nervous. I want to be the one that's like holding you and making sure that you feel like you can do it, that you're confident. I'm going to be your support.
Yes.
I love that. I would much rather be that person. Wouldn't you feel better about yourself if you're that person?
Absolutely. Yeah. And like posses are awesome. Let's bring back the posse. We need more of it.
We do. Joey, this has been such a treat. I love our conversations.
And
this
was
no exception. Oh my gosh. I'm looking forward to having another one in the near future.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you. Do you have any other stories you want to share? I love the one about watching that video because that totally fits with everything we're talking about and having difficult conversations and being a support person. And having fun and making sure that that's what people see, because people, that's our audiences. They want to see that we care about what we're doing and that we're having fun.
Absolutely. I can share one more story of a time I got banned from a Chinese restaurant. This is, I think this ties in nicely of not really understanding where the other side is coming from. But this goes back to my study abroad days, or I guess college days, when we were studying abroad in China, and we were at a restaurant we had been to. I do not remember the name, so it's possible I could walk into this restaurant, not know I'm banned, and get hopefully just be asked to leave and no further penalties or anything like that. I also don't think they took a picture or our names, so like they probably won't remember. I'm sure the statute of limitations is passed. Now too,
so. They won't recognize
you. Yeah, I'll be totally fine. But we went in and we had a graduate student with us who was fluent in Mandarin. And so she was able to order at restaurants like these where they did not speak any English. And so she put our order in the first time we went, and it was phenomenal. It was just like everything was so good. There was our star dish was a beef. It was just like a beef and noodle dish, but like had this sauce with it that was just like the greatest thing. I can't even describe the sauce, but it was like the best thing. And so we're like, okay, like later in the trip, we're like, we need to go back to this place. And so we go back, she orders the same stuff, but different stuff comes out this time. And it's good, but it's not the best. And so she's like, the graduate student says, okay, she's like, I'll fix this. Like, oh, let's get them over here. And so she calls over the server and presumably is explaining, hey, this isn't what we ordered. And they're kind of like raising their voices a little bit. And then the server leaves, brings back a manager. And the manager comes in, they're again kind of getting in a shouting match. And a third person comes over who I'm assuming is like the owner, maybe. And everyone's just like yelling at each other about everything. And then the graduate student just goes, okay, okay, okay. And the three of them walk away. And she's like nodding. And then she turns to us and she said, we're not welcome back here anymore.
They've asked us to leave.
Yeah. And we were like, do we need to go right now? And she's like, no. They said we can finish our meal, but we can't come back after that. And I think it just stemmed back from like neither one willing to admit like, oh, maybe I ordered something different last time, or like maybe I misheard you this time, but just both being kind of their own stubborn selves. And we're just sitting, like I was still eating watching it. I was like the Michael Jackson popcorn gif of him just popping popcorn in his mouth. I'm like, what's gonna happen next? This is great. And also like kudos to all the other diners at the restaurant who like did not stir at all. Like, they're just having their own conversations and meals, like not even turning their heads at all to see what was going on. So I don't know if this is a regular occurrence or if they're just better at not, drawing attention to a scene, and they're like, we'll just let this happen. We'll keep eating. So it was a great time.
I have mixed feelings about that. You know, part of me, if they understood the whole conversation, part of me would hope that one of them would say, hey, I think there's a misunderstanding going on here. But you know, I think that's part of what has been bothering me so much about all of the conversations happening right now, is people not saying something, not wanting to get involved. And in most cases, whatever, you know, you don't want to get involved, don't get involved. But there's so many situations where if we don't get involved, things get worse, you know, especially face to face. Obviously, Facebook is not the place to get involved, but but really, I think it's really important that if our listeners take anything from this conversation, it's that you do need to get involved. And those conversations don't have to be as ugly as you might think if you approach them with curiosity. So I think that's how we would leave that for our audience. What do you think?
I agree. Well said. I can say it in my voice as well, and we can dub it over, and it'll be... We'll say it together.
Score. So Joey, if people want to get in touch with you and learn more about what you do, and maybe just a quick description of what you do in terms of your income producing activity, which is not the podcast, I don't think.
That is not the main source of income. Although no. I do have a shop on my podcast site. So that's a nice little,
there you go.
One of my many little side hustles. By day, I work at a marketing communications agency, so helping a lot of B2B tech clients essentially share their stories through PR, social, digital content, all different kinds of stuff. And then I'm also a freelance writer, again, going back to the curiosity angle there of just wanting to learn more and write about stuff. And primarily have written about, I'd say, music, sports, and just general kind of like business are my three main ones. Although I have been writing a lot about sleep lately as part of a series of posts, and realizing that I do not do a lot of the things that experts recommend you do before bed that I think could maybe help with some better sleep. So happy to share all of those. You can find me on LinkedIn, Joey Held. Very easy. I think I'm the only Joey Held on LinkedIn. That might not be true, but I've never seen another one. So clearly there can only be one.
There can be only one.
Yes, there can be.
You got to have the structure of that sentence accurate. Otherwise, it's not the same thing
yes.
as a great
there
movie. There can be only one. Thank you, Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, true.
He was so good in that movie.
He's good in everything. He's wonderful. Except The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which made him retire from acting. But that's a story for another day. And then I always love hearing from people at my site as well, goodpeoplecoolthings.com. And if you have any basketball fans, I'll plug my Crisp Bounce Pass newsletter, which today's issue was about Parks and Rec, the show, and all the NBA cameos on it, of which there are a handful. So it's always wonderful. It's about basketball, but it's more like basketball and pop culture. So it's, I like to say, non-fans can still find enjoyment out of it.
I love it. Well, I forwarded your newsletter to my brother-in-law, who is a basketball fanatic. So. And I can recommend it even as a non-basketball watcher.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's good. It's entertaining, and it really puts things... I like the way that you use it for analogies and metaphors, so it's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Joey. I'll be in touch, and for our listeners, I will have links on the blog post associated with this podcast, so you can reach out to Joey. You can sign up for his newsletter, and definitely go listen to his podcast, Good People, Cool Things, or Cool Stuff, Cool Things.
Cool Things. The cool episode thing with Sarah is very good. Would recommend.
Thank you. It was really fun. So I'll have a link to that. And then I highly recommend that podcast because it's pretty entertaining. And I love that there are these unpredictable inspirations that pop up through those episodes. So I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's a good time.
It is. Thank you, Joey.
Awesome. Thank you, Sarah. This was great.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
Now listen to me, honey, while I say, how could you tell me that?